May it please the court. My name is Niall Williamson. I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff, Phyllis DeWitt. This case comes to you upon the granting of a summary judgment in favor of the defendant employer and the termination of a near-perfect registered nurse at Proctor Hospital in August of 2005. I say near-perfect employee because she just received a performance evaluation in December of 2004, and of the 30 possible rankings or points that an employee could receive, she received 30. I've also quoted her supervisor's comments in that evaluation in the reply brief, and I won't bore you with repeating those quotations.
Why do you think they retained these other employees who also had big medical expenses?
Of the three affidavits filed by Ms. Buck, Your Honor, it's very difficult to tell which employees they did retain because she attaches stop-loss employee. Well, I'm not sure they did retain employees that had large medical bills, Your Honor.
Sure. We've done discovery or what?
We didn't have discovery because the case was converted from a 12B6 motion to a motion for summary judgment. The plaintiff filed a motion for stay to conduct discovery. The district court struck the motion to stay, saying there wasn't an electronic signature on the pleading, at which point in time there was a plethora of affidavits filed by the defendant by Ms. Buck, which we had to respond to. We also filed a motion for leave to add the ERISA count at that point in time. This entire litigation, Your Honor, was conducted in a four-month period of time between the end of September of 2006 until March of 2007. Ms. Buck, by the way, is not the person who hired, supervised, or terminated my client. That person's name was Mary Jane Davis, who is the vice president of Proctor. Ms. Buck is the vice president of human resources. We did file a motion to strike the initial Buck affidavit. That was denied by the district court. Each Buck affidavit attempted to fill some additional hole in the argument, Your Honor. Each time there would be something pointed out to the district court.
Look, I'm very confused. Are you asking us to reverse on the basis that you weren't given a chance to do discovery?
No, Your Honor, not at all. I'm asking you to reverse on the basis of the direct evidence in the file.
How can you complain about not knowing the circumstances of these individuals who the defendant says were retained, even though they were very...
I don't necessarily complain, Your Honor. I point out that since it's a summary judgment, the district court has made judgments on the authenticity of the affidavits.
Submit an affidavit which says there were these three people, they were more costly than your client, and we retained them. If you don't file a counter affidavit or ask the judge for more discovery, and if he refuses appeal to us, then you're stuck with those affidavits.
I did file a counter affidavit. The plaintiff's counter affidavit is in the file.
You said you don't know anything about these three other employees. So what good is your counter affidavit?
As to the amounts of money, that's true. My client does not know that. I'll point out then that on the ERISA and ADA counts, I don't believe the plaintiff has to show comparables to state a cause of action.
No, and we're just curious. Why is it that... let me ask a different question. Suppose they just cut. Suppose they cut your. Cut off your client's insurance or terminate or what have you, just because. Just because her husband's condition was very expensive. But they don't care whether it's a disability or what. They just cut off people who cost them too much. Would that be discrimination?
I don't think they can cut off. That's not what we've alleged. We allege they fired her to stop their liability as a self-insured employee.
Suppose they fire everybody who costs them a lot. They don't care whether it's a disability, a criminal charge, an accident, anything. They just don't care. They just don't like to, well, they can't afford to pay for people who have heavy medical expenses.
While I may be sympathetic to that, Your Honor, panels of this court have held that's illegal under both ERISA and ADA.
Forget ERISA for the moment. I don't understand that with the ADA. ADA is discrimination against people with disabilities. If all you're, quote, discriminating against is people who cost you a lot, whether it's because of a disability or because of anything else, where's the disability discrimination?
The disability discrimination is under the ADA Association Clause, under this court's ruling.
No, you're not answering my question. Suppose that the employer cuts off or fires any employee who costs it a lot. For whatever reason, it costs it a lot. Could be medical, but even if it's medical, it's not necessarily because of a disability. It could be because of something else. So if they just do that, you know, automatically, why is that discrimination against a person with a disability or his wife or his husband with a disability, her husband with a disability?
That's what the statute says, Your Honor.
You're not following me. The statute doesn't say that it's a violation of the ADA to cut off, to fire an employee because the employee has high medical expenses, or his wife, or his husband, her husband has high medical expenses, because a lot of medical expenses are not incurred for a disability. They're incurred for something that's an illness, but it's not disabling, right?
Yes. But there was no argument in this case that Mrs. DeWitt's husband was not disabled.
No, you don't understand.
I'm not.
Let's say he's disabled, but suppose there's some other husband or wife who isn't disabled, but he has very high medical expenses for some reason, and they fire this person's spouse. So they're not discriminating on the basis of disability. They fire anybody whose spouse has heavy medical expenses. Now, why would that be disability discrimination?
In that factual circumstance, Your Honor, that's conceivable. Wouldn't be discrimination because they're firing everybody. They're not firing everybody in this case.
This objection was raised by the defendants, was it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I say I don't think the objection that Judge Posner is now raising was raised by the defendant.
It was not. Mrs. DeWitt's husband was a medical anomaly. He developed metastasizing prostate cancer in 1994. He lived for 12 years. He had significant and huge medical bills. They asked about it four different times within 8 months of this lady's termination. They told her they were self-insured. They said they had a committee reviewing his bills because he was a high-end person. That was $250,000 a year. That was too much. If the court is willing to say that that economic consequence to Proctor was too great as a business entity, then so be it. But I understand it's a violation of both ERISA and ADA for the primary motivation of that defendant to terminate this employee just to cut off their liability on the medical bills.
Back to Judge Posner's first question, though. After I looked at this case, I didn't think that it was an issue about the company's retaining several employees who were in a similar situation but had greater medical expenses than the spouse of your client.
Your Honor, this is where the factual distinction comes into play. One employee may have large medical bills in a single year, but it may be a beginning and end medical situation. They may have surgery. There may be substantial medical bills in that year. Proctor didn't have any desire or need to terminate that employee because those claims were over with. My client's claims were running at $200,000 a year for 8 to 10 years, only 5 of which Proctor was responsible for. It was the ongoing nature of the medical claims of my client's bill which undoubtedly caused the termination.
When she was fired, what was her husband's situation?
He lived 1 year after that. He had metastasizing prostate cancer. The the supervisor kept asking my
client. Under COBRA, didn't they have to keep paying for him anyway?
Well, I don't think, no. I think somebody else was paying under COBRA. That's the point. Once they switched to COBRA, they're no longer self-insured. They don't have to pay up to $250,000 a year. They're using COBRA as a justification to infer that that wasn't their animus, and that's not true.
Who pays under COBRA?
I'm not, the record isn't clear on that, Your Honor, but they aren't self-insured under COBRA. Under each time Ms. Buck filed an affidavit, she never made any reference to being self-insured or Proctor having any responsibility under COBRA. So their liability stops.
How much, what were his medical expenses in his last year after she was fired?
They only go up to 04, Your Honor. They don't identify. It was $177,000 in 04. And they're self-insured for $250,000. He dies in 06. He dies a year after she's terminated.
Okay, so what were his medical expenses in his last year?
It's not in the record. Ms.
Well,
Buck
know
was,
that, surely. It's your client's
I have an
husband.
Idea, but I don't...
Why did you find out what it was?
Well, because my client's not getting the bills, Your Honor. She doesn't know that easily. It would have been her saying her part to suggest that.
You can't ask the hospital what the bills are?
We would have liked to have asked the hospital if we could have conducted discovery, but the hospital did not identify the 200...
About your inability to have completed your discovery.
I can only tell you that the record says that as to the last, as to 04, it's $177,000. My light's on.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Russo?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Richard Russo. I'm here on behalf of Proctor Hospital. In listening to your questions, it is clear to me that you have read the briefs and that you have a clear understanding of the case. So I don't want to belabor the points that are contained in my brief. However, I would like to address
Let me ask you this. I understand how you're defending this case, that there was no similarly situated person who was... There were similarly situated people who were not discharged. But there's just one statement in your brief that she was fired. Counsel says she was a perfect employee. And you say one place that she was fired for insubordination, but that's never really fleshed out. What are we talking about here?
That's correct, Your Honor. Based on the fact that the prima facie cases lacked evidence, Proctor did not present its legitimate, non-discriminatory basis for terminating Ms. DeWitt. The insubordination reference was solely put in there because...
I thought it started out as having inadequate telephone capabilities and changed to insubordination somewhere along. You talk about insubordination in your reply brief.
That was what was alleged by Ms. DeWitt in her complaint. Proctor did not submit any evidence whatsoever regarding the basis for the termination because of the fact that her initial prima facie case...
There's plenty of evidence that they terminated her because of her husband's expenses. What's wrong?
Your Honor,
only thing you have going for you was these other people who were not terminated, who had expensive medical experiences, but according to your opponent, we don't know whether these people represented an ongoing expense to the company or whether their claims were over with. Is that correct?
What is in the record, Your Honor, is the fact that there were employees, including an individual, a female employee, who in 2004 and 2005 had costs in excess of Ms. DeWitt's, and it's not clear from the record whether any of them had continuing illness.
Of course, the concern with her was that her husband was lingering year after year at extraordinary expense, so they could see, you know, into the indefinite future heavy expenses. If these other people were in basically good health and had some, you know, bad experience, but it was over, you know, like open heart surgery or something, you recover from that, and you're fine for a number of years if you're lucky. So those wouldn't be similarly situated people at all.
If I might address that, Your Honor, two things. First of which, Yes, I cannot sit here and tell you that, or stand here and tell you that the other employees had conditions that were lingering. That's not in the record, and I'm not privy to that information. But what I can tell you is Ms. DeWitt's expenses, yes, they were expensive, but they were not necessarily an anomaly, as Mr. Williamson indicated. They were exceeded in each year by other employees. She was hired by Procter in 2001. As Mr. Williamson indicated, her husband had cancer for a number of years prior to that. She was hired in 2001, and the expenses were not high. They did not show up on the stop-loss reports until 2003, in which case it was, I believe, $71,000. 2004 was $177,000, and then 2005, which is the year of the termination, I believe they're at $67,000.
Weren't they watching her expenses pretty closely? They confronted her a couple of times about why she didn't put her husband in a
hospice.
They're not treating her any differently than any other employee.
They were watching her expenses, though. They report. They told her wife what the expenses were, I believe.
I believe there was one conversation, Your Honor, in September of 2004, which is almost a year before the termination, where if you look at the affidavit from Ms. DeWitt, it's stated that her supervisor asked her about her husband's treatment and what options they were considering, and then just said, essentially,
what was the option they suggested?
I don't believe that she suggested an option. I think what was said was, what are your treatment options? Have you considered putting him in hospice? There's nothing to indicate that they want him to go to hospice, that the hospice is any less expensive than...
Well, when you suggest you put
than,
him in a hospice, that implies a lot of things about his condition, doesn't it?
I don't believe that they were suggesting it. I think they were asking if that was a consideration. There's no indication that they were concerned about his bills. The stop-loss
reports... Well, the case was thrown out on a McDonnell Douglas finding that there wasn't a prima facie case, isn't that right?
For the ADA association aspect?
Yeah.
The judge analyzed, I believe, under both aspects, but I think the ADA association, the plaintiff, Ms. DeWitt, focused on the comments that Ms. Davis made and was hanging her hat essentially on a direct method approach using circumstantial evidence and using the statements.
You had to have some evidence. He sort of said that there has to be some direct evidence, circumstantial direct evidence, to back up the indirect analysis, isn't that?
What the court indicated was that there has to be some connection between the expenses and the termination, and the comments themselves don't establish that connection. Moreover, when you look at the evidence submitted by Procter, the fact that other employees who had higher expenses...
No, we've been through that.
Let me ask
you. That's not strong evidence.
And I also want to point out, Your Honors, that...
Wait, Judge Evans has a question.
Let's go back to this. Originally, when you moved for summary judgment in this case, you did not allege an alternative basis for the grant of summary judgment, to wit that she was not performing up to expectations. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So that issue's been... When you move for summary judgment, usually lay out all your cards, and that would be an alternative basis, if true. So what are we to make of this claim of insubordination as the reason? That's not in the case.
I did not handle the summary judgment, so I can't speak as to why it wasn't put in there. But what I can say is we've not alleged any reason for her termination. The insubordination was in her complaint. The reason why there's no need for us to set forth that basis is because it's her burden to establish a connection between her husband's disability and her termination.
But
and
there's
no
evidence. There's plenty of evidence. Of course there's evidence. It's very expensive to the company. The company complains about it, tries to persuade her to consider cheaper options, and then fires her apparently without a reason. So what more do you need?
Your Honor, I don't see anywhere in the record where the company has complained about her expenses. There was one conversation where her supervisor asked about her husband's treatment and merely mentioned
that hospice isn't treatment. Hospice is where you go when you're finished, right? When you're dead, when you're dying.
There's no indication
it's supposed to be very cheap. We all know what hospices are. So if you ask a person, shouldn't you consider a hospice for your husband? You're really saying, shouldn't you let the guy die? Right? And, of course, you say that because it's very expensive. I mean, use your common sense, right?
Your Honor, I understand what you're saying. What I'm saying is that there's no indication that Proctor actually suggested it or pushed it.
It's an indication. It's called circumstantial evidence, right?
And moreover, Your Honor, that was September of 2004. The termination wasn't until August of 2005. If there was that much of a concern for the medical expenses, why would you not terminate the employee around that time as opposed to incurring more expenses?
They thought he'd die. Then he's still around a year from now. They figure, it can go on forever with these very heavy expenses.
I think the sheer fact that there was high expenses.
It doesn't make any sense. If you have good evidence as to why, a non-invidious reason why she was fired, it didn't make any sense at all for you not to put that into the record.
Your Honor, the plaintiff has the burden, and I...
No, you both of you are caught up in this McDonnell-Douglas stuff. It's such a waste of time. McDonnell-Douglas is designed essentially for race cases. Now, then it gets stretched because it's a Supreme Court decision. People try to use it in all sorts of discrimination contexts where it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit the disability situation well.
I do think that the sheer fact of expenses...
They didn't stick to a pure McDonnell-Douglas model, whatever that is. They put in the evidence that in an ordinary case without a Supreme Court rule, you'd say, yeah, it's indirect evidence, the expense, they're concerned about expense, she seems to be a good employee, they fire her anyway.
Your Honor, I again don't believe that there was a concern about the expense. I don't see that in the record.
You don't believe it. The question is, could a reasonable jury believe it on this evidence?
I think the answer is yes. I think with the other...
And you missed your best argument, which is that I think you missed it. That was Judge Cudahy's question. I mean, your best argument is that if all they care about is money, not whether someone has a disability, then there's no discrimination. Now, the Supreme Court's been through that with age discrimination. If you fire an employee because he's expensive, the fact that there's a correlation between your age and your wage, because wages tend to rise through one's career, doesn't mean you're discriminating on the basis of age. It just means you're trying to cut costs. And that's not discrimination. And similarly here, if they fire an employee who costs them a lot, whether it's because of a disability or because of anything, then that's not disability discrimination. But you didn't make that argument, right?
Did not make that express argument, Your Honor, but the fact that there are other employees who cost them more money
is indicative of that. Look, but you missed the essential point, which is if these people had completed their expensive medical activity, then the company, can breathe a sigh of relief. Now they've paid for it. They don't anticipate continuing huge annual expense, which is what they anticipated with the plaintiff's husband.
Well, there's no indication one way or the other regarding whether those other employees who had higher costs, whether
yes,
that condition were
no, but they're your employees. You could have put in evidence saying, yeah, they represented a continuing expense also, but you didn't do that.
Well, Your Honor, the plaintiff certainly didn't raise that argument.
A trial, right? Because he didn't put in your evidence.
The plaintiff did not raise that argument. Otherwise, we would have put that into the record. That was not an argument made by Ms. DeWitt in counteracting our summary judgment motion. And are there any other questions that I can address?
I guess not. Thank you, Mr. Russo. Mr. Williamson, does he have any time? I have a few minutes.
Unless the court has any further questions, I have no further rebuttal.
Okay, well, thank you very much, both counsel.